Come and dream with me.
Hello, and welcome to What Do You Want to Watch, the Explosion Network's premier media podcast. Every week we get together to talk about movies, TV, and online content and help you answer the question, who yelled at Rebecca Ferguson? Let's spend the next 65 minutes breaking down every single movie she's been in and who it could potentially be. I'm your host, Ash Hubley. Joining me today, Don Blight.
My doom.
Very, just completely irrelevant. Dylan, who do you think yelled at Rebecca Ferguson?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. Are you getting him or Michael Fassbender?
Yeah, one of them. None of the ones. I don't think so.
No. Saw Dwayne Johnson get out there early and like clear his name as quick as possible. Yeah.
He's like, whoever did this, not me. Should really think about what they're doing. Because I only yell at people on the WWE Network, which you can watch Monday nights.
I only yell at Cody Crybabies, you know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he would have gotten more heat if he had said he was.
Yeah. You know. Shut up, bitch.
But yeah. That was a thing that happened this week. I don't know where else to address this, but did you see the other massive news story that kind of took over the internet this week that's like tangentially related to film and TV news?
Maybe. I don't know what you're hinting at. So
the Willy Wonka experience in Scotland.
Yes, I did see this, yes. Who didn't see this?
I don't know, because I felt like...
It was everywhere.
Anyone who did anything slightly related to news... brought it up this week. And for good reason. It was ridiculous.
I hope they do a documentary. Someone needs to look into this.
Someone needs to do a documentary. The person who played the unknown thing did a face reveal today. It's like this young woman.
Shocking. Like, who'd have thought? A young woman.
Yeah. Crazy. So yeah, if you don't know, a bunch of people scammed a bunch of people out a bunch of money by... doing a very shoddily put together Willy Wonka experience, despite advertising with what is clearly AI images of what a Willy Wonka experience would be.
It didn't even look close.
Not even close, yes. It was just like a couple of big mushrooms and a candy cane. You know, so. What a incredible world we live in. So, yes, I'm looking forward to someone's in-depth story of how that happened. But today we'll be talking about what's in our worst history, going over a little bit of film news, giving some thumbs to the trailers, and giving you this week's top three. Kick things off with the big one. Over in this podcast feed, we've already done a spoiler cast for Dune Part 2, the latest movie by Denis Villeneuve in his Dune series, starring Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Dave Bautista, Florence Pugh, and a bunch of other people. Dylan, what are your non-spoilery thoughts? It's just a long list. What are your non-spoilery thoughts of Dune Part 2?
Yeah, it's great. Loved it. Just, you know, big time, big blockbuster cinema, lots of fascinating ideas. I do think it's been very interesting to me post our spoiler discussion and the point of contention that we had and on the movie and the character direction, and I've seen a lot of people on the internet. I don't think this is spoilers, but the most fascinating thing I've seen this week is all the calls about cultural appropriation, like this is like taking on Muslim culture, all this sort of stuff. People are like, this is bad. This makes it bad in the film. But then I'm like, no, it doesn't, because they're the bad guys. Like, you know. Have you not seen these discussions?
No, I'm trying to, like...
Because people are like, whatever her name is, what's the mum's name?
Jessica.
They're like, man, this bitch coming in there, doing, you know, like, if I can act like all this, like, wearing the hood, like, all that, you know, the garb, everything is like, she's a white woman in there taking on this very, like, Muslim, cultural vibe and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, that's the point. And then you got this white boy over here doing white boy savior shit. That's terrible. They're taking on Muslim culture. I'm like, yeah, I feel like that's the point. Like, I've just had a... Yeah. It was so funny seeing, because all this happened, of course, we watched the movie, or especially you, watched it before American audiences watched it. You got like a full few days in, and yeah. I got a 24-hour peace period. And then I feel like everyone in America watched it, and they're like, this movie is terrible because of cultural appropriation. And I've seen a lot of arguments from people, and I'm on a very clear side of, I don't think it is, when, at least in my mind. I don't think
it's cultural appropriation when there's a message behind it.
Yeah, like, and to me, as we talked about in the spoiler cast, I definitely feel like the message is like, what they're doing is not actually, the message isn't, this is good. Like, as I talked about in the spoiler cast, I took it as the message is, this is bad. So, anyway, that's been my...
I don't think... My baseline opinion is, I feel like people are too quick to call cultural appropriation for anything and everything.
I don't think doing I don't think doing cultural appropriation when the message behind it
I don't think in general cultural appropriation is bad. I think icky when someone comes along and tries to make a bunch of money off somebody else's culture and that kind of stuff, like for their own personal gain, but being influenced and like,
well, that's kind of stuff. It would be cultural appropriation if you actually did a movie that was inspired by and very obviously inspired by Muslim culture and stuff like that. But it was just like, it was the white boy savior story for that, like that culture or whatever else. But that's not,
if it was like The Last Samurai or something like that.
Yes. Yes.
Some would argue that might be cultural appropriation.
Yes.
But yeah, incredible movie, incredible visuals, incredible score, incredible performances. Yeah, it's been, I think the film was fantastic. The aftermath has been very interesting. It's like seeing a lot of the discussion, even the debate we had about, you know, whether, you know, that person is good or bad, you know. Some people who have already read further into the series have put their opinions forward, which I think is a little bit biased, but, you know.
Yeah, I feel like I saw someone tweet the other day. Someone tweeted something like, man, I really love like that in that scene where Paul does that thing and he stands up and tells everyone in that room, blah, blah, blah. I really like related to that character. And finally, we have the hero we deserve. And someone quite retweeted and was like, man, you're going to regret that a couple movies from now, something like that. And yeah. I felt a lot better about my thoughts on the character, if that's the... yeah.
You know, you don't turn on somebody straight away, you know.
I didn't turn on him straight away. I turned on him in the course of the movie.
It's a progression. It's a whole. Listen to our spoiler discussion. I think we've covered our sides of the argument reasonably well. You know, you didn't have a choice, Dylan. There was one path, one way forward.
You'd stop bringing it back to Doctor Strange. It's not fucking.
He literally says that's the case. I don't know what to tell you. What's the other option? Everybody dies. Sounds great. You know.
I'm just listening to spoiler cast.
I'm very excited because a lot of other places have not put out, or a lot of other places that I usually listen to have not had spoiler casts or discussions. So I'm looking forward to listening to them as well. But listen to us first.
Yeah.
Because we asked the hard hitting question that nobody else will ask.
I saw it got answered though. Did you?
Did you? Did it?
Yeah, so I forgot to retweet. I saw Vanity got an article out the other day. Denis Villeneuve says he has an answer for how they get off the sandworms for future movies. He says it's something like, the quote was, he knows. I'm like, okay, motherfucker. Like,
you telling me I need to wait 6 years until you finish your next movie?
I could be dead by then.
Find out.
Yeah.
How they're supposed to get off the goddamn sandworms.
Yeah. Terrible. But when I saw that article come across my Twitter feed, I said, this article's for me.
And that it didn't answer anything that you want?
No.
So, again, we need to ask. How do you get off the damn sandwich? Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, obviously did spectacularly at the box office. I think it's already now the number one film worldwide this year. At time of recording, it's sitting at $178 million worldwide, which takes the number one. Do you want to know what the number two movie so far this year is? Do you want to guess?
I couldn't even, could I? It's going to be something completely unpredictable.
I know. I feel like it's reasonably predictable.
I can't remember what's come out this year.
Number two, The Beekeeper. At $151 million.
I would have not picked that, no.
Okay. Tell you what, Madam Web. Madam Web sitting at number six, you know? Not doing too bad. $91 million? That's a lot more people. That's a lot more money than people have giving the impression, you know?
If I, can I get your live reaction to something that I just saw out of the corner of my eye?
Sure.
Just, if I share this here, here's a link, and then I want you to watch it, and then I want you to explain to the audience what you just watched. There you go. He's clicking on the video. Now, explain it as you watch it, you know?
It's the video on X. Oh, yes, I've seen this. So it's a TikTok video. Someone has made, like, a Freeman suit. And they're riding around on a makeshift sandworm.
In the cinema. You know?
Around a cinema.
Yeah.
You know?
How good?
You know? It must be trying to figure out what the mechanics is.
I don't know, but...
It's some sort of... I think it's a scooter.
I don't, you know, like
the way that he's standing, like, side on... And then there's got the handlebars, electric scooter. There's not enough
people
scooter.
In the cinema, like, cheering for this, I feel. Like, a lot of people just stand around being non-phased.
No, that's because he's doing it, like, 11 o'clock on a Wednesday.
Get hyped, you know what I mean? Like, fucking...
I mean, to be fair, this sandworm does not have a mouth.
Chill out. Long live the spiders!
Yeah, so that's a thing. Here's an interesting one that I got. I was looking at. Like, as we're prepping. Are you excited for the upcoming Dune Prophecy TV series now? I'm more excited.
Oh, is that the one you're talking about the other day?
So it was...
The Witches one? Benderidex?
The one they've been developing at Max, obviously. It's had a bunch of issues behind the scenes. But it is currently still slated to be released on Max in late 2024. Apparently, it's set 10,000 years before the events of 1965's Dune. And the series follows two sisters... as they combat forces that threaten the future of humankind and establish the fabled sect known as the Bene Gesserit.
I'm intrigued. I wouldn't say I'm excited. Let's put it there. I'm intrigued.
I think after this movie, I'm more intrigued, as in into that sect of the canon.
World, yeah.
So, yeah. Look forward to more Dune talk, probably in the... You know, coming weeks? I don't know. I feel like it's going to be making a lot of money. We're going to be talking about it probably award season next year. And probably when we talk about our favorite movies at the end of this year. So, all very exciting. So, over on Disney Plus, I've been watching Shogun, the new FX series. So, this is based on the 1975... novel, I want to say.
The trailer that I said looked terrible, and then everyone's saying it's a really good TV show. So.
Yes. 1975 novel by James Clavell. So it's set in... the 1500s. and follows... It's set... So the previous king of Japan... or emperor, I can't remember which they refer to him as, has passed away. His son is very young, so he's not in a position yet to rule. So he left five, lords in charge as, like, a council to, like, keep the country going until his son was of age to become the rightful emperor or whatever. And it becomes, like, kind of this political struggle between several lords, as they kind of, you've got Yuki, forget names. Hiroyuki Sanada plays Torinaga, who's like a main protagonist, a main Japanese lord that we're following, who is the righteous, who in a perfect world he would have been left in charge, but he kind of turned down the option to be the shogun because he was worried that, his enemies would come up against him and, like, kill him and then kill the emperor's son. So yeah, he's in this awkward situation, especially at the start of the series, where he is pretty much like being tried to be forced out of the council and like killed because the others in the council don't like him very much. So this is an interesting time period in Japan where a lot of the Portuguese have come in through the country and have started to introduce Catholicism into the country. And I don't know actually how much of this is true. I don't know how historically accurate this is, but I'm just telling.
Like that all sounds right so far, from what I know.
But the reason they've come to Japan and spreading Catholicism is because they've made an agreement with Holland. They've split like the rest of the anywhere but Europe amongst themselves, and thus installing Catholic leaders in all these countries that they've kind of starting to infiltrate with their beliefs and that kind of stuff. But then an Englishman called Paul Blackthorne comes with his ship, gets stranded, like, they're fighting, he's English, they're fighting against the Portuguese, he comes to Japan, they get shipwrecked, they get brought before this lord, he explains all this, and, you know, that's kind of the setup of the series, I guess. There's the first two episodes, there's a lot more than that, you know? But yeah, it's fantastic. It's really good, very high production values. You know, the Japanese people speak Japanese, you know, which is well, I feel
no,
like
it is for a show, but it's just the idea that the Japanese
like it just makes you appreciate how far we've come. Like, you know, I'm sure like several years ago, like we would have had Japanese people, just everybody speaks English. The only thing is in Japan they've been taught to speak Portuguese, but they just substitute Portuguese for English. So when they're saying they're speaking Portuguese, they're speaking English.
Yeah, can't win them all.
You know? Yeah, because, you know, who cares about Portuguese?
Yeah, who cares about Portuguese?
Nobody knows how to speak Portuguese, so it would mean so hard to get so many actors to speak Portuguese. but yeah, it's really fantastic, high production values. It does have that like Game of Thrones, political, historical, like it got that political element in a world that was very foreign to a lot of the audience. You know, even the like the title cards, they've got these very big sweeping title cards with like. I can't remember. What's you know the thing they do with this like the sand? How you make the rake the sand in to make it look special?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. But
like
I
Zen Gardens, that kind of thing. Yeah. Uses a lot of them in the opening credits and that kind of stuff. You've got these different like houses, I guess, or like groups, you know, who support their lord and that kind of stuff. So it's like houses in Game of Thrones and that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's really fantastic. Like, there's a really brutal death in the first episode that I don't think I've ever seen any other show do before. So all these, like, all the English people come to land and, like, one of the fief of the land is, like, quite brutish and that kind of stuff. He's like, I'll take you, Paul, to be, like, my prisoner, but I'm going to, like, try to interrogate one of your men to, like, give us information. And the way he interrogates him and eventually kills him is he just drops him in a pot of hot water. Or boiling hot water and just leaves him in it while it's, you know, so he's just cooked to death, pretty brutal.
Yeah.
So yeah, Shogun, check it out. Everybody's talking about it. don't believe what Dylan says about trailers. You know, he's very wrong on this case. Yeah, Yuki Tsunade, fantastic. The main female lead, Anna Sawai, she's fantastic. Yeah, I'm very keen to see where the story goes because it's definitely introducing a bunch of cool ideas. Again, this is an interesting time period in Japan, and like I feel like everybody knows modern Japan, but maybe don't know the history of the country and that kind of stuff. So check out Shogun. So Dylan, yeah, it's been a very busy week for you. You've got a bunch of video games that I know you've been playing, which you can listen to you talk about on Echo Couch, but you found time to watch a horror movie that I was sure that you'd already watched, because I know you're a massive Winnie the Pooh fan.
I am.
So you watched Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Correct.
Why now?
second one's about to come out.
Why haven't you watched it before this, I guess, is the question.
I've owned it for a while. I've owned it since it came out on Blu-ray. I've just never got around to watching it. And obviously it never came to my cinema because my cinema would never play junk like this. So, yeah, I mean, I brought it when the Blu-ray came out and it just, like, it's been sitting here waiting for the time. And, you know, the time was now.
Time was so, now.
It's not a particularly great movie. But the setup is fun. Like, it opens with this hand-drawn little backstory as to how we get to these fucked up versions of the classic Winnie the Pooh characters and friends, which is that they're like, oh man, Christopher Robin hangs out with them all and he meets them and they explain them. They're like, you know, hybrid, weird looking, disfigured sort of animal creatures. But he makes friends with them all and he loves them and he hangs out for a while and then eventually he goes to college and they all get left alone and they don't know how to fend for themselves anymore and they're left to find food. And then they eat Eeyore, turn into fucking of cannibals, I guess. And then years later, the movie starts with Christopher Robin now as an adult trying to bring his fiance to meet them all and prove that all this stuff he said is not lies. And he turns up and, yep, Piglet and Pooh just are like, no, we're going to fucking kill your fiance and kidnap you. And then the rest of the movie basically is a bunch of girls who have come out here, mainly for the one friend who needs to, she just went through like a traumatic event by like someone breaking into her house at night and like attempted rape, basically. And she stays, takes all the friends out here because they're like, we're going to stay out here in the middle of, you know, middle of nowhere. And then out comes fucking Pooh Bear and Piglet. And they're just, at that point, it's just a slasher. Right? I think it's fun considering the budget because it was a very cheaply made movie. It has like ideas I just feel like I feel like a lot of the stuff is, and I know the sequel's got a much larger budget, so I'm hoping the ideas that you can see and the potential within like what they want to do with this pays off in the second one, but you can tell it's like a lot of budget constraints into the direction of this movie. It doesn't feel like the director doesn't understand how to shoot horror or like it doesn't feel that cheap and stuff. So I know based on the trailer for the second one and all the posters and stuff like that, the everything from the masks to the locations and the amount of extras and stuff, like the because this movie turned into a weird success, like especially given the budget. So yeah, I mean, it's not a very good movie. I think I gave it like a 4 on track. So it's pretty bare bones, but yeah, I'm hopeful for the sequel. And as look, I'll put it this way, as much as I love like straight up Disney Winnie the Pooh and still like love all those characters and will happily watch all those Disney Winnie the Pooh stuff and enjoy it, I am not on a high horse enough to not also be able to appreciate that they're taking the piss out of it here and having a bit of fun. Like it's fine. Like this isn't for people screaming about this and saying it's ruining it for kids. I'm like, kids aren't watching this. Like, and if your kid is watching this, you're a terrible parent. So
yeah. Put like, parental controls on.
Yeah, like it's not ruining it for kids because kids aren't watching it. It's fine.
Yeah, but it is ruining it for kids, so I don't know what to say. apparently, they've already planned a third one. So,
yep, already announced. They announced 2 and 3 back to back. So,
ugh.
And they're doing a Bambi.
Yeah,
that's the other one they've also announced. Same director, Bambi.
Terrible. So I watched the new documentary on Prime Video, Kids Are Growing Up, a story about a kid named Leroy, which obviously follows the career of Kid Leroy, from his, you know, his family moving from Australia to America to allow him to follow his music career to his eventual collaborations with Juice WRLD and Justin Bieber to becoming a, you know, pretty big star in his own right. Knew very little about the Kid Leroy going in, other than, you know, he's
from Australia.
He's from Australia. He's a rapper. He's in that. He was in the
documentary.
He was. He was. He's also in the McCrispy ads.
Sure. I didn't know that, but yeah.
Yeah, go back and watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It definitely feels like a feels like a really high production home movie. You know, I don't feel like I learned a lot. You know, there's a lot of behind the scenes footage, and like, there is a lot of talk about certain like difficult points in his life and that kind of stuff. Like, he goes kind of in depth about, you know, he was very close to Juice WRLD. It helped him like break into the industry, was a mentor at the start, and then obviously Juice WRLD died at a very young age because of like he had a medical episode at the airport and was unable to get it medical assistance at the time, and how that kind of affected him. And then obviously he's trying to get his music career going, and then COVID hits, and they're all kind of in lockdown, so they've, you know, trying to do the thing. And yeah, and then, you know, it kind of culminates in him coming back to Australia and doing this big arena tour, which, you know, he hadn't done at that point. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but yeah, it definitely feels like a lot of behind the scenes footage, a lot of like nothing super in depth, I feel like, or super informative. It's, you know, I'm sure if you're a Kid Laroi fan, it's cool. I've like, they don't even have like major segments talking about his music or anything like that. It's just kind of, I do this thing. There's this one song with me and Justin Bieber, Stay, that's was a big hit, you know? And then I'm coming back to Australia. I got my own McDonald's meal to bring it back to the Big Crispy. You know? Yeah. I mean, it's a fine documentary, you know? Definitely kind of forgettable though. Let's move into the mandatory Netflix segment of the show. I watched the documentary American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders, which is, so it follows a reporter, a journalist, in present day called Christian Hansen. He's looking into the story of Danny Calzaro, who was a writer back in the late 80s, early 90s, who was working, you know, tech beat. And he stumbled on this story around a piece of software called... a company called InsLaw that had a special type of software that was being used by the government that they stopped paying for. So then the company went under and they kind of seized the software for their own use. And the government, they tried to sue the government. The government kind of would, it was really bad. They won their like court case or whatever. Then the government fired the judge who made that ruling and put one of their defense lawyers on the bench as a judge. And that judge threw the case out on appeal. So the government was able to keep all the software that would allow them to go through all law cases, like law cases, and you easily identify.
This is one of the most convoluted things I've ever heard you explain.
It is just the tip of the iceberg. So yeah, from that starting point, they start to go into like a wider conspiracy of them selling this software out to other countries, even their allies and that kind of stuff, but including like backdoor entries into that kind of stuff. So they would be able to spy, the American government would be able to spy on other countries through this software. This leads to a much bigger potential conspiracy involving drugs and running guns in through different countries and going all the way up to the potential top of the government, into this being one of many tentacles of an octopus. And the documentary kind of like goes down the rabbit hole of the story as far as it can. But, you know, then it starts to get to the point where it's like, is this story actually true, or are we being fed a bunch of lies and that kind of stuff? Because the other catalyst of his, and a point that I feel pretty bad for not mentioning, the reporter in 1991 was found in his hotel bathroom with slit wrists, which the police automatically ruled a suicide, but his wrists were slit so badly that the tendons in his hands were were cut on both sides. So most people would, most rationally thinking people would be like, you can't slit your wrists if you can't hold a...
You can't slit your other...
Hold
you can't
a knife.
Of a wrist. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it kind of going into, was he murdered? Who murdered him? Why did he murder him? And yeah, it kind of gets into the crazy conspiracies. There's this guy who was a tech genius who got into drug trouble because he's making drugs by himself and got arrested and then was like being sought after by a bunch of different intelligence agencies to like work for them and that kind of stuff, who wronged the wrong person and then was sent to jail for like very standard drug charges, but like kept in jail for like the maximum sentence, like for like decades, whereas most people on the same charge would have gotten like 5-10 years. Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting story. I don't know if it feels at the end, I don't know if it feels like it was worth the investment either by the documentarian or by us watching it. Just, you know, it's a fascinating story, but was the payoff worth, yeah, worth the investment? So yeah.
That's one of the most confusing things I've ever heard you explain on the show.
It was a very dense documentary that went a lot of places, covered a lot of things in 4 episodes. What a documentary that actually justified its length, in my opinion, at the very least.
It's usually pretty bad. Talk yeah, about like yeah, the
time management. So, yeah, I would. I mean, I don't know if I'd recommend it, but it's definitely something that's would be a very interesting watch for anybody. So, there's that. And then I also watched the latest season of Formula One, Drive to Survive. This year's season 6, following the 2023 F1 season. Very interesting. You know, lots of different interesting storylines this season, including Daniel Ricciardo coming back to F1 after like 6 months out of without a seat. He gets a chance. Like, it kind of documents him being a reserve driver at Red Bull and kind of like being there to do promotional stuff and like help out behind the scenes. And then the driver at the AlphaTauri was just not living up to standards. So he kind of gets pushed into getting that role. But then, you know, he breaks his hand like the first race he gets back in. So the other reserve driver gets an opportunity and does really well. So there's all these interesting dynamics. And then a lot of the middle pack teams are like having different performing, like some performing better than they did last season, some performing worse than last season. There's a big battle between for second and third between Ferrari and Mercedes. I mean, it's boring because Red Bull's winning everything, but down the grid, there's a lot of fun. And yeah, there's like a lot of interesting foreshadowing, especially with Lewis Hamilton talking about, you know, he's going to, thinking about whether he wants to sign his contract for next season, make a move somewhere else. Yeah, it's a really interesting prep going into this F1 season. So, at this point, you know if you're going to want to watch Drive to Survive.
You watch that NASCAR one? So.
Nah.
What if you like?
I'm not here for people driving around in circles.
What if the drama?
Know?
What if the people bring it home? You
know? I don't know. Maybe I might give the first episode a watch. See, but you know, I don't know if they've got the same character as, you know, F1. They don't go as fast.
They go pretty fast. So, I watched Talladega Nights, you know.
I don't think they've got anybody like Talladega Nights.
Maybe that's how. Maybe that character is based on someone.
I don't know. All right, that's everything I watch history. I haven't got much in film news this week. It's been reasonably quiet. Like, I think everybody's like been watching Dune. So, here's an interesting piece. James Gunn has given us fans a sneak peek at the film Suit and revealed that the DC Studios movie has a new title. On Threads, the filmmaker announced that the title for Superman Legacy has been changed simply to Superman.
I'm fucking sure.
Yep. Another post.
Are you kidding me?
You're right there, mate.
Are you kidding me? I dropped my mouse in the bin amongst all that drama. I know, you're kidding me. Continue. That's your. Woo! You should have prepared me before you hit me with that one.
Yeah, prepared, yeah. Yeah. And another post, he noted the film has begun on the DC Universe film and showed off a picture of this new Superman suit, specifically with the S with snow on it.
Whoa.
Who would have guessed? Fucking,
you're tickling my balls.
What are your thoughts on Superman Legacy just being Superman?
I don't know. That's too much for me to handle. I don't know. Have they ever done that before? Have they ever just called it Superman?
Not since the original Superman film.
Fucking, let's slow down, James Gunn, all right? Let's not go doing anything too drastic before you've got a few films under your belt, I would say. You know, let's go with what works. Fucking chill out, man. You wild dog. You wild animal.
Yep. Okay. So another story I just saw. Over on Variety, it says, Hollywood union leaders warned of a possibility of another strike this summer if the studios cannot reach a deal before crew contracts expire on July 31st. Speaking to a rally of more than 2,000 crew on Sunday at the Woodley Park in Encino, Sean O'Brien, the president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, said the union should commit to withhold their labor and not grant extension if a deal is not agreed by the deadline. We are not afraid to strike, O'Brien said. If these greedy corporations, whether it's Amazon, Netflix, Sony, Disney, if they choose not to reward our members, they're putting themselves on strike. We'll put them on their back, on their knees, begging for mercy.
Oh, God.
Negotiations with the Alliance of Motion Pictures and Television Producers are set to begin on Monday. The International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, Teamsters, and the Hollywood Basic Crafts will jointly bargain health and pension benefits. Over the next few months, IATSE and the Teamsters and Basic Craft will then bargain their separate agreements with the hope of having the deals ratified by the deadline. Dylan, do you think that the industry can survive another strike?
Yeah, she'll be right, eh? I reckon there's still enough movies. I reckon there's still enough. I reckon the strike could have gone way longer. Would be right. I think people preferred it when everyone was on strike because then they just got their movies... you know, less fucking around. I think a lot of people preferred it when COVID and the strike were a thing. You know, just put them on Disney Plus, put them on iTunes, buy them. Who cares about these people? I reckon people don't really care.
I agree that people don't care, but I think they should just agree. We really don't need another.
No, I'm not saying I want a strike. Could we survive a strike? I think yes.
I don't know. Like, I feel like this week there was a bunch of stories of, hey, we lost hundreds of million dollars this financial year.
Dropping the pond, though, isn't it?
It was rough. Dropping the pond. I mean, all those streaming services, you know, so. I don't know how much of that is related to the strike or just the business model of streaming services.
Yeah, you can't really feel bad when a lot of places who are like, man, we lost money. It's like, well, you wouldn't, like, agree to the...
Yeah, wouldn't pay. You wouldn't pay money. Well, we didn't have money to pay them, so. I know it's a vicious cycle. So, yeah. Hopefully this one just gets... sorted much quicker, you know. I mean, on a scale level, surely it can't be as competitive as, you know, what the writers, actors and that were demanding, like, wage-wise. Because, you know, the Teamsters don't need residuals and that, well, don't rely on residuals and that kind of thing. You know, you just get paid.
Just get paid.
Yeah, it's just, like, pension rates and that kind of stuff, so... Hopefully that gets sorted out quickly so it doesn't affect anything. But yeah, unions. Doing the good stuff. Yeah, so there wasn't a lot of big stories to cover, but every week there are just so many different bits of casting news and announcements of projects that we like to cover them in a segment I like to call Would You Want to Invest? In this segment, I give Dylan a different project with, you know, different crew, directors, actors, writers, hopefully a short synopsis. And he lets me know if you'd like to fully invest, partially invest, or not invest, and then history will be the judge if he's... and then history will be the judge of whether he is right or wrong. So, yeah. First one for this week. Noma Dewani is set as a lead opposite Alexander Skarsgård in Apple TV Plus's sci-fi drama Murderbot from Chris and Paul Weitz. Based on Martha Wells' best-selling Hugo and Nebula award-winning book series, The Murderbot Diaries, Murderbot centers on a self-hacking security android who is horrified by human emotion, yet drawn to its vulnerable clients. Murderbot must hide its free will and complete a dangerous assignment when all it really wants is to be left alone to watch futuristic soap operas and figure out its place in the universe.
Is this the inspiration for Roomba Killing Game?
Like I don't think
so.
Vacuum
that's pretending to be a vacuum, but then likes to kill people.
I mean, maybe the first book came out in 2017.
Maybe.
But based on the look of the cover, it looks like it's a android-esque looking thing. Yeah. So,
who'd you say was in it?
Alexander Skarsgård.
Yeah, full invest. He's a bankable right. star, I feel, surely.
If there's any. The Abandons, Luke Kurt Sutter's Western action drama for Netflix, has added six as series regulars. Lucas Till, Nick Robinson, Diana Silvers, Lamar Johnson, Aisling Francisco, and Natalia Di Villego. Created and executive produced by Sada, who also serves as a showrunner, The Abandons follows a group of diverse outlier families pursuing their manifest destiny in 1850s Oregon as a corporate force of wealth and power coveting their land tries to force them out. These abandoned souls, the kind of lost souls living on the fringe of society, unite their tribes to form a family and fight back. In this bloody process, justice is stretched beyond the boundaries of law. The Abandoned will explore the fine line between survival and law, the consequences of violence, and the corrosive power of secrets as this family fights to keep their land. Of course, Kurt Sutter, the guy behind Sons of Anarchy and Mayans MC.
Partial invest.
Okay. Negotiations are underway to bring Academy Award nominated Emily Blunt to the Dwayne Johnson film vehicle, The Smashing Machine. Blunt would play Dawn Staples, the wife to MMA champion Mark Kerr. While trying to set up a life together, Dawn struggles to find a place within Mark's chaotic and contradictory world. The film is a drama based on the story of Kerr, the legendary MMA fighter from the no-holds-barred era of the UFC. He struggles with addiction, winning love and friendship, set in the year 2000. The film is written and directed by Benny Safdie and produced and financed by A24.
Fully invest. Why'd you save the best part for last?
No, just, you know. You weren't sold by Emily Blunt or Dwayne Johnson.
But also, what's the no hold barred era of USA before they had like what, a ref?
I get before they had more hard and fast rules.
Okay, so it's just whoever dies first,
you know,
or taps out first.
Kind of, you know,
no stoppage or anything.
Yeah, I think it's like a more grassroots like era, you know, where they're definitely not as big as they were now. You know, back when everybody who watched it kind of like people who didn't watch it considered it barbaric.
Right.
You know, two people fighting each other without.
Now it's like, so normalized.
Now it's normalized.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Olivia Munn has been cast alongside Jon Hamm in Your Friends and Neighbors, Apple TV Plus's upcoming drama series from Warrior creator Jonathan Troper and Apple Studios. Hamm stars as Coop, a recently divorced hedge fund manager who, after being fired, resorts to stealing from the wealthy residents in his Tony upstate New York suburb in order to keep his family's lifestyle afloat. These petty crimes begin to reinvigorate him until he breaks into the wrong house at the wrong time.
Actually, you know what? Full invest in that, I reckon. Yeah. Apple, Jon Hamm, Olivia Munn's there too. You know.
Certainly is. Felix Solis and Owen Teague have been tapped for supporting roles in The Friend, the New York drama, the New York dramedy starring Naomi Watts and Bill Murray, which adapts Sigrid Nunez's New York Times bestseller. Winner of the 2018 National Book Award for Fiction, The Friend follows a New York writer in the aftermath of her lifelong friend and mentor's unexpected death. Thereafter, she is left to deal with his complicated literary legacy, three eccentric ex-wives, and a massively heartbroken Great Dane named Apollo.
Nah, I got nothing for that. The challenge for these Great Danes.
Tough. Skydance has closed a deal with Mila Kunis to produce and star in The 47-Night Stand, a new film scripted by four-time Emmy nominee Greg Malins. The project is in the early stages and the logline is being kept under wraps, though it's described as a fresh and funny take on the romance in the tradition of classic favorites.
Nah, got nothing for that either.
47 just seems like too many.
It does seem like that. Way too many.
Okay. Last one for this week. Nick Offerman and Betty Gilpin have joined Matthew McFadden and Michael Shannon in Netflix President Garfield assassination series Death by Lightning. Death by Lightning comes from Bad Education screenwriter Mike Makowski, who created the series, and directed by Matt Ross, with Game of Thrones duo David Benioff and D.B. Weiss executive producing via the overall deal with Netflix. The series will bring to life the stranger-than-fiction true story of James Garfield, reluctant 20th president of the United States, and his greatest admirer, Charles Guiteau, the man who would come to kill him. Garfield was president in 1881 and was assassinated later that year, having previously served 9 terms as a congressman. He was elected as a senator, but declined this when he became president, despite not having sought the office.
They love to kill presidents over there, don't they?
I mean, yeah. Hopefully it doesn't come back in vogue, but there was a time period where it was a cool thing.
I'll go partial invest on this one. Interesting subject matter. I'm not super sold on those involved, but yeah.
All right. I guess we'll wait to see if film was right or wrong on these process. Very far in the future. But until then, let's talk about some movies that we know are coming soon by giving some thumbs to trailers. Of course, you can find all the trailers we're about to talk about this week in the show notes below. Kicking things off with The Strangers, Chapter 1, directed by Renny Harlin, starring Madeline Petsch and Froy Gutierrez. Maya drives across the country with her longtime boyfriend Ryan as the pair begin a new life together in the Pacific Northwest. Along the way, their car breaks down in Venus, Oregon, and they are forced to spend the night in an isolated Airbnb home. Through the night, they are terrorized by three murderous masked strangers. Dylan, what are your thoughts on The Strangers franchise as a whole, and what did you think of the trailer for The Strangers Chapter 1?
The original movie is a classic, really, really fantastic thriller. It had some sequels that, or at least one, was it more than one?
They had one sequel.
Prey at Night in 2018. Pushed it more to sort of a action thriller territory rather than straight up like tense thriller. This movie looks to be pretty much following as straight as you can remake of the first one, which I'm fine with, because when they announced this they said they were doing three straight up, so it wasn't like we'll see how this goes. Like, they're setting out to make a three-part story, which is interesting for a story like this, but it's, I guess, based on this, the plan is this, like, let's just remake the first one, kinda capture some of those vibes that everyone loved about the first one, and then go from there into the sequels. So I don't know if it says bad or good thing for this, but watching this trailer made me really want to re-watch the original. So
yeah, so what'd you give it?
Oh, double thumbs up. Sorry,
double thumbs up. I'll give it one up, one down. I feel like, you know, I feel like it could have been a little bit shorter. That's my only thing, criticism. Feel like they took a long time to build up to, there's a bunch of bad people around here, you know, and I don't think it's the best acted performance I've seen.
Whoa.
It's a, yeah.
What are you saying about Cheryl Blossom?
Yeah. I'm saying she was better in Riverdale. Yeah, I know. Just took a while to get going.
Yeah,
that would be my criticism.
The original,
I have not seen the original. I also was like, "What? This does isn't the original the one with Naomi Watts and Tim Roth?" But no, that's Funny Games, which I feel like is very similar, and was confused for a little while there.
Not really. So Funny Games is like
a bunch of people, couple of hooded people, masked people, come into a house and start messing with them.
Yeah, but they're very different. If you were to watch them, you would do. They're very different.
Yeah. Are the masks relevant?
No.
No.
Just freaky masks from the first of the movie. All I gotta say is I hate it. I can't remember the exact wording, but the only thing I don't like about Charlie is in the original movie, like when they ask, like, "Why are you doing this?" They're like, in the original, I think they say, "Because you were home," and then in this one they say, "Because you were here," or something like that. And I'm like, oh no, I prefer the original.
Yeah. What's with the creepy kids?
In the mask?
No, like at the start, at the store. Staring at them.
That's just, you know, rural America.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
All right. Strangers, Chapter 1, is coming to cinemas in the US on May 17th. Currently no Australian release date. Next trailer, Chicken Nugget, created by Lee Byung-hun, starring Ryu Seong-rong and Ahn Jo-hong. A woman steps into an odd machine, and she becomes a chicken nugget. Now it's up to her father and admirer to embark on a sandy quest to bring her back. Dylan, we don't do many K-dramas in thumbnail trailers, but I couldn't pass this up. What do you think of the trailer for Chicken Nugget?
Yep, double thumbs up. The fucking weirdest trailers I've watched in a long time, but yeah, double thumbs up. I'm keen to watch this odd thing about a woman turned into a chicken nugget.
Yeah, two thumbs up for me.
Fresh out of the fryer, by the way. That's what the
I mean, they're nailing the advertising.
A crispy fried comedy fresh out of the fryer.
Incredible.
Yep.
Yeah, two thumbs up for me. It just looks very ridiculous. My only concern is hopefully they're not like long episodes, because I could see the joke like running thin very quickly.
It should be 20 minute odd episodes.
Now, I will say they're not Australian chicken nuggets, you know?
No, they are not. They're not American chicken nuggets either.
No, they're Korean chicken nuggets, which
straight up Korean chicken nuggets,
which isn't really chicken nugget. It's just like
Is this a like translation a chicken thing? Ball. Or like, yeah.
Yeah, I saw the name it's called in Korea, but I can't remember. It's like hot and spicy something or something. You know, not chicken nugget, but
Dak Gong Jeon.
Yeah, it translates to something else.
Sweet, crispy Korean fried chicken. So not chicken nugget.
Yeah, I guess that'll make it simpler.
The closest, yeah. Because if the show was called Sweet, Crispy Korean Fried Chicken, it doesn't have quite the same ring as...
Doesn't nugget. Get off the tongue quite as easily. But yeah, I'm very keen to check this out. just, you know, hope it's very short and sweet and spicy. So this is releasing on Netflix on the 15th of March. Next trailer is for The Watchers, directed by Ashana Shyamalan. Starring Dakota Fanning, Georgina Campbell, Oliver Finnegan, and Olin Fura. A 28-year-old artist, Mina, gets stranded in an expansive, untouched forest in Western Ireland. Upon finding shelter, she unknowingly becomes trapped alongside three strangers who are watched and stalked by mysterious creatures each night. Dylan, what did you think of this latest Nepo Baby film?
Yeah, I mean... Nepo Baby film, for sure. I thought it looked really good, to be honest. Double thumbs up. Really intriguing, odd, you know, setup and everything like that. Sort of, I mean, honestly, the trailer was reminding me of something done by old mate who's about to release Civil War.
Alex Garland.
Seemed garlandy, right? A little bit?
Yeah, like a little bit.
Sort of thing. Yeah.
I mean, the forest, like, evokes, you
know, maybe that's what it bit. Was the forest and everything. But yeah, I'm gonna double thumbs up. I went the trailer started the first 30 seconds, I was like, yeah, on a mirror listening to it, whatever. But yeah, the more the trailer went along, I was like, you know what, this looks pretty interesting actually.
Yeah, I'll give it 2 thumbs up. I think it sets up an interesting mystery, and it would be fucking scary to be in this, I don't know, box or whatever, and you hear something on the other side of this two-way mirror. And you know it's a two-way mirror because, you know, they go out during the day and see inside the space. I don't know. I feel like my only criticism is I would have liked them not to have shown, teased what the creatures are at the end.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think they could have just left it at, you know, the dude being pulled in and they've got like some sort of hole in the ground and that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, hopefully the lore of the world is interesting enough to like carry the movie and that kind of stuff, you know. But yeah, looks intriguing. Looks like a movie I won't watch, but looks intriguing.
Structural debut too.
Yeah,
well, absolutely. Feature debut.
Her feature debut.
But for people who don't know, it's M. Night Shyamalan's daughter.
Daughter. Hence, if you had any guess from
Nepo baby comment,
based on him producing the movie as well.
Yeah, it says from the in the trailer. It's like from the M. Night Shyamalan, the producer of blah blah blah. It's like it should just pop up and said from the literally just pop up and just say the daughter of this director, like.
Yeah.
Do you like his shit? Anyway, here's his daughter's stuff.
Mm-hmm. So this is releasing in cinemas on the 13th of June. Next trailer is for Davy and Jonesy's Locker, created by Evan E. Rosen, starring Veronica Slowikowska, Jalen Thora Brooks, Dan Byrne, Emily Pigford, Nico Angelo Hinoya, Erica Swayze, and Sydney Topliff. Davy and Jonesy feel out of step with their peers and the banal backdrop of their high school. When they discover their locker is actually a portal to the multiverse, they set off on new adventures. Dylan, what do you think of the trailer for Davy and Jonesy's Locker?
I'm going one up, one down. I was a lot more intrigued before I realized it was a TV show, to be honest. I don't know if I can hold my attention for as long as the movie may have been up to, is my only concern with it, I would say, currently. Like, I'm intrigued. I'm not sold.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give it one up, one down. I'm worried about the tone. I'm also worried about the length of the series. I think I saw somewhere it was 10 episodes. Is it just them going to a different multiverse like every single episode, you know?
I assume
that's what it is, you know. You know, obviously it's not the biggest budget show and that kind of stuff, which kind of adds to a little bit of the fun of it and that kind of thing. Yeah, obviously it's going to rely heavily on the chemistry of the leads. And there wasn't a lot to sell you on that chemistry from this, you know, little snippet. You know? I don't know if I really want to see 10 episodes of people saying girl boss and she CEO.
Yeah.
So yeah, this one is coming to Prime Video on the 22nd of March. Last trailer for this week, I Saw the TV Glow, directed by Jane Schoenbrunn, starring Justice Smith, Bridget Lundy Payne, Ian Foreman, Helena Howard, Fred Durst, and Danielle Deadweil. Teenager Owen is just trying to make it through life in the suburbs when his classmate introduces him to a mysterious late-night TV show, a vision of a supernatural world beneath their own. In the pale glow of the television, Owen's view of reality begins to crack. Tim, what do you think of the trailer for I Saw the TV Glow?
It's like two people talking about how much they love watching Goosebumps, but then like the Goosebumps stories start coming to life, is how I took the... Or like they're affecting. I don't know. Oh, like take back everything. I have no idea what's going on in this, but it looks great. Double thumbs up. Fuck it. Why am I trying to theorize?
I think I know what's going on.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on. Double thumbs up. I need to go back and watch. I had it on my list of things to watch, and I never got around to it. In fact, I think I brought it digitally because it was like one of those like it's fucking $6.99 to rent, or it's on sale to buy for $5.99. Yeah. I was like, I'll just fucking buy it. We're all going to the World's Fair, which is the movie this director did prior to this, which I remember seeing a lot of mixed reviews about that, because again, that's a weird, like, I think it's all like mostly just the one actor in it from I remember reading. So I need to actually go watch that as well. Side note.
That's fine. I give this 2 thumbs up as well. It's definitely very trippy and, you know, colorful, and definitely has its own look and style. Justice Smith seems like he's going through a lot in this trailer. It's very intriguing, obviously, the idea of like them having this relationship around this really weird show that's on at late night at TV, and like, you know, having the connection and talking about that stuff, and then she disappears and his world kind of seems to crumble around that lost relationship as well as the lost show. Some interesting visuals. There is that shot of him sticking his head into a CRTV that I'm sure the kids today wouldn't understand what, you know.
What is a CRT?
You can't put your head through a TV. CRT. Well, I guess you could put your head through a TV, but you'd be fine because you come out the other side. Pop out
2 millimeters the other side, yeah.
Yeah. Very fascinating trailer. Hopefully, I think there's probably a bunch of clues in there. Like, very interesting visuals. Like, they've got that, like, neon drawn symbol they're doing on the back of the neck, that kind of stuff. Very intriguing. So I Saw the TV Glow is releasing in cinemas in the US on the 3rd of May. No Australian release date.
This shit has not come to cinemas here.
I mean, it's an A24 movie, so it'll probably be months later everywhere except Launceston.
Yeah, that's true.
And then to home video like 3 months later.
Yeah, look forward to it.
All right, let's move into this week's top three.
Definitely in the top three.
And being pretty lazy this week. This week's top three is top three.
I gotta be honest. I saw you post it and I went, simplicity.
Top three Denis Villeneuve films. You say simplicity, but yeah, not
this
ease.
Is easy. This is easy.
Really?
Yeah, I've thought about this. This is fun.
Okay. You've prepped this one in your mind for like several. Yeah, like I've been keeping the tally.
I'm good. Yeah,
it's fine. Dylan, what's your number three?
Number three is Prisoners. We talked about it years ago. We did a spoiler cast, I believe.
Before Dane, from memory.
Yeah. That would add up, eh? It's about Paul Dano plays a weird motherfucker. Hugh Jackman plays an angry dad, and Jake Gyllenhaal plays a cop. And it's about how far people go to extract what they believe to be rightful revenge. One of Hugh Jackman's best performances, in my opinion, in that film. Some really intense scenes, well directed, put together, mystery thriller. So that's my number three.
My number three is Arrival. Amy Adams led, alien story about a bunch of aliens who come to Earth, and she's there trying to communicate with them. But maybe it's also a time travel movie, movie about family. I don't know. There's multiple layers, and there's a lot to unpack in this, you know, 116-minute movie. Jeremy Renner's fantastic. Amy Adams fantastic. Really fantastic cast. This is probably the movie that kind of led him in the direction, or allowed him to go in the direction he's kind of been the last few movies. So, Arrival's my number three. Phil, what's your number two?
My number two is Arrival. Fantastic film, like very unique, takes the world invasion of aliens typical tropey setup. You know, it starts with these people flying in, army dudes, you know, typical sort of shit, and that's just a bunch of people trying to talk, you know, a bunch of people just trying to communicate. I love the ideas behind the movie. I still wouldn't say I fully understand every idea in the film at all, but that's what makes it so interesting and great to rewatch. Cast is fantastic. Jeremy Renner is really good, but obviously Amy Adams is the standout, fantastic lead in this film. So, yeah, Arrival number two for me.
My number two is Dune Part Two. Just saw it. Might just be recency bias, but it's fantastic. Incredible scale. Incredibly beautiful. The messaging and the themes, you know, definitely worked for me. Even though I do have some criticism and that kind of stuff, I think overall it is an incredible experience and something to see in the cinema. So if we didn't already convince you at the start of the episode to go see Dune Part Two, go see Dune Part Two. Dylan, what's your number one?
Number one's Blade Runner 2049.
Dylan, my number one is Blade Runner 2049.
My phone case is a Blade Runner 2049. There you go.
Enough wow, I shared that. I didn't know that.
So there you go. My phone case is.
It's Anna de Armas.
Yeah, Anna de Armas on the back there. Yeah, I think this is an amazing. Just like this is. I mean, to me, this is how we get to Dune, right? This is.
Yeah.
This is the full scale smart blockbuster. I guess is the thing, which is something a lot of people don't do anymore. We used to do. That's how you got films like the original Blade Runner. Not really a thing anymore. But and I mean, it didn't really pan out for him, to be honest, because the film never did as well box office wise as we may have hoped, which is why they never bothered.
It made $267 million on a $150 to $185 million budget.
Yeah, which is considered a flop by the studio because it needed to double it.
I don't know if it's a flop, but it wasn't a success. It
wasn't a success. So, but that's fine because it's a great movie. There's been discussion this week around it. Weirdly, a lot of people, you know, going back and forth on it, and him in an interview saying it keeps him up at night and all this sort of stuff. But
yeah,
I think it's definitely my. I don't want to say like it's his best movie if I was to go like off craft or whatever, but it's definitely my favorite Denis Villeneuve movie. I think everyone in the cast is fantastic, from obviously Ryan Gosling through to Ana de Armas. Dave Bautista gives one of his best performances here, even though it's a very small role. Jared Leto is acceptable on this because he's barely in it.
Yeah, Jared Leto before he started getting super Jared Leto. Yeah.
Robin Wright's really good. I mean, there's lots of Mackenzie Davis for her small role.
Yeah.
There's lots of people in this I could think about. But yeah, it's just such a beautiful... cyberpunk as a genre is like... really, really love cyberpunk stuff when it's done right, and this to me is like that exploration of the cyberpunk genre done correctly. And I remember just sitting in the cinema going like, oh fuck, this is so good. Like, I could not wait to watch it again. So many like just screenshot moments. The score, like I remember like after you go for the opening of the movie and then him like flying over the city, that like blaring score of like drums and shit with the rain kicking in, and I just remember thinking it was the coolest fucking thing ever. So, yeah, Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, fantastic, really enjoyable story, but also like a great what is like one of the top legacy sequels we've gotten so far. Taking a movie that, you know, obviously can be cult classic, and like, you know, this was one of the earliest movies that it felt like Harrison Ford was enjoying acting again as well.
Yeah. Very much so, I'd say, yeah.
He's fantastic. Ryan Gosling, you know, again, he's great in pretty much everything. This is the first time I feel like I really saw Ana de Armas. She's fantastic in this. And, you know, it is a beautiful movie, and I'm glad that Roger Deakins, although he deserved to win an Academy Award for like a billion other projects before this, he finally won one for this. Yeah, just incredible, like all the desert shots and, you know, like you said, bringing the cyberpunk world to life. I feel like so much interest in Cyberpunk 2077 was kind of on the back of how good this looked and the idea of cyberpunk from this. So, fantastic movie. Really dug it. So, yeah, that's my number one. Although, you know, it's not like this, that his filmography is spread out from what I've watched. They're all very close.
No, I need to go back and watch his
earlier stuff.
Earlier non-English American films, I think.
Yeah. I feel like that everybody's been saying that in the last few weeks. Dylan, this week, what do you want to watch?
Well, last week I said I want to watch something, and then it turns out I couldn't.
Do you want to tell people here on what you want to watch? The story.
So I come on here last week and I say, hey, I'm really looking forward to watching whatever movie I said, Dune. That would actually, why'd I say it like that?
It was Dune.
and then I said the TV show Pokemon. And at the time, pointed out how it was live and I could see it and it was playing on 10 Play. 9 Go, yeah. They all blur together. So then I go to find it afterwards on the 9 Go app, I guess. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah. Turns out that they're not, for some reason, letting you, they're not doing any recap. You cannot watch these. So if you miss the episodes of Pokemon at 10 a.m. or whatever dumb time they're showing, when kids are at school and I'm at work, too bad, so sad, you cannot watch them anymore. It's fucking dumb. Anyway, I emailed them and said, this is ridiculous. I have not got a response, but I expect one. And if you're listening, fucking answer me, motherfuckers.
Need to get back, ridiculous. Get the old VHS tapes. Okay. Set the timer, make sure it's recorded during the day.
Well, the fucked up thing is that, like, unless you've got something like that set up, there's literally no way to, like...
Yeah,
fix it currently. I'm like when I was growing up, that would have been the answer because we always had a VCR plugged in to record shit. We're like, we used to record Pokemon and stuff like that, but ridiculous.
Yeah. So this week, what do you watch?
This week I would like to watch let's go with How to Have Sex. I've been looking forward to that. Lots of it's a funny name to say out loud, but really been looking forward. I read a lot of positive buzz when it hit whatever festival it showed up at. I cannot remember at this point, but
pretty much all of them.
Yeah, probably at all of them. Yeah, I mean, just it's a teen coming of age story, like drug, sex, all that sort of stuff. But it looks to have a real vibe, European vibe, I guess. So yeah, and it's from a female's point of view to the director, so it's not a guy. So like, I think I'm hoping it has like that brings something unique to it and stuff like that. So, and from someone who's done a fuck ton of shorts, I remember looking at the director and being like, man, you've done like a billion shorts. So you've definitely got the reps.
I think they're also a cinematographer by trade. So
yeah, so maybe that explains why the movie looks. I wonder if they shot the or got someone else to look to the, don't know. But yeah, because I'm watching trailer and just thinking like it looks really good. So let's go with that. That'll be my pick. A TV show, I got nothing, I don't think.
Interesting.
The Gentleman Season 1.
Yes. That's what I was gonna say on the TV front. That looks like it'll be interesting, although it's gotten like kind of mixed reviews for what I've seen a little bit. In the film I wanna go see The Great Escaper, which is the Michael Caine Glenda Jackson film about a World War II veteran who escapes his retirement home to go visit, go attend the 70th anniversary of D-Day. Like, finally releasing here in Australia.
Ages ago.
Yeah, we watched the trailer like ages ago. I believe it's Michael Caine's last performance until like someone offers him a bunch of money. Until they do.
I don't think that
Christopher
helps.
Nolan's fourth movie.
I feel like he's retiring because he can't remember the lines or struggles. Wasn't that the thing? Like,
I don't. It could be, yeah. So
age, man. It's a killer.
Cue cards. but yeah, check that out. All right. Let us know what you want to watch this week. Did you watch Dune Part 2? Let us know by going to explosion.com/Twitter or jump into Discord at explosion.com/Discord. If you want to help us out here at What Do You Want to Watch, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser. Leave us 5 stars and you can leave 5 stars. Or just tell people about the show. And if you've enjoyed this episode, thought it was worth a dollar, head on over to our Ko-fi page at explosion.com/support. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time, keep watching stuff, I guess.